Jehovah Israel, Amrim Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel, that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our dramatic program today, The Tabernacle in Duke's Place, is written by Morton Wishengrad and is the fifth in a series of recreations of 12 outstanding Eternal Light programs.
Somehow it was more terrible at night. More terrible and more beautiful. The tracer bullets would stitch a quick seam of flame up into the sky, and the incendiaries and the bombs spilled down like beads from a broken string. That's how it was the nights of May 10th and May 11th, 1941, when the Luftwaffe was over London. Uncle Nathan died the first night. There was a neat hole through the top of his helmet. He had been on air raid duty over at Duke's Place, just outside the great synagogue.
Hush, Kiven, O Adoshe Meloke.
Sooner or later, a man must die. And there are worse ways of dying than from a shell fragment in the skull. Please understand me, I'm not a hero. But there are worse things than dying. Like seeing the roof of the great synagogue go up in flames. And seeing a bolt of fire fall on the ark that holds the holy scrolls. Are the holy scrolls still there? I don't know. I know that the synagogue stands naked to the wind, the roof gutted, the walls charred. The pews where I sat and my father sat, and his father before him. Nothing but a gray feather of ash. I'm sorry for that. That pew had a history. 100 years ago, Sir David Solomon sat in that pew. Please don't misunderstand me. It's not important that Sir David was once Lord Mayor of London, or that he was the brother-in-law of Moses Montefiore. It's more important that he was an upright man, and that in the days of Queen Victoria, may she rest in peace, Sir David Solomon's was aroused by something.
I'm not going to wait anymore, Amos.
No?
No, I'm not going to wait. I'm not going to pussyfoot. I'm not going to hold my hat in my hand and ask for favors anymore.
Well, save your speeches for your constituency.
That's exactly what I'm going to do.
I see. Then you're going to stand for Parliament again.
That's what I mean.
It isn't wise, Sir David.
Why not?
Because it isn't wise.
That's no answer.
You know the answer. You're a Jew. No Jew has ever sat in Parliament.
Amos, a few years ago, no Catholic sat in Parliament.
That's different, Sir David. You'll be attacked because you are a Jew.
The Catholics were attacked because they were Catholics. The same civil disabilities applied to them. They fought against it. That's what we have to do.
Maybe. You stood for Parliament twice already.
3 times.
So much the worse. You lost each time.
This time I won't lose.
All right. Suppose you win.
Well?
They won't seat you.
Exactly. But I'm going to oblige them to say why they won't seat me.
I've told you why.
Let them tell me.
They'll tell you you're a Jew.
I'm running for office as an Englishman.
Sir David, you're going to get into trouble.
Thank you, Amos. It seems to me that's a risk I have to take.
Sir David? Henry, stop the carriage.
Ah, I thought I recognized your carriage, Lady Russell.
Can I drive you someplace?
It's very kind of you to ask, but it's the Sabbath.
Yes, of course. You don't ride on Saturdays.
No, ma'am.
Will you talk a little politics?
Well, it's not what I should do today.
I hear you're going to stand from Greenwich.
That's true.
Don't. It's a Tory stronghold. No liberal has a chance.
I'm already committed, Lady Russell.
Too bad. You're sure I can't take you anywhere?
Thank you, Lady Russell. I'm going to the synagogue at Duke's Place. I'll walk.
David, I want to see you.
Yes, Rabbi.
Come in here, where we can be alone.
Are you going to scold me, too?
Why do you want to do this foolish thing, David?
Is it foolish to want to serve your country?
The question is, do you want to serve your country or yourself?
I don't know what that means, Rabbi.
We read a Sabbath chapter from Pirkei Avot today. I'll repeat it for you. Seek not greatness for thyself, and court not honor. Let thy works exceed thy learning, and crave not after the table of kings. For thy table is greater than theirs, and thy employer is faithful to pay thee the reward of thy work.
I don't want greatness, Rabbi. I don't crave the table of kings.
Then what are you after?
Not long ago, a Jew could not vote. I resented that.
So did I as an Englishman. But now we can vote, so why complain?
We still can't sit in Parliament.
Does it rankle so much?
Very much, Rabbi. I'm quite willing to be barred from Parliament because I'm incompetent, but I won't be barred because the Tories don't admit Catholics, Quakers, Separatists, and Jews.
The others are now admitted, David. Our turn will come in time.
In time is too long. Now is the time. The time is always now, Rabbi.
You're right, David.
That's the only reason why I want to run. To wipe out the humiliation. This humiliation not only to us, but to England.
I believe you. And I bless you, David. But remember something.
Yes.
You're an Englishman, but you're also a Jew. Whatever you do, whatever you say, must be done and said for the sake of righteousness. You must be an example, David.
You've told us a lot, Mr. Candidate. But how will you vote on the poor relief bill?
That's right, David Solomons. How will you vote?
I'll tell you how he'll vote. He's a tough like the rest. You can see it in his blooming face.
Oh, shut up, Wilkins. You're not the speaker.
How do you stand, Sir David?
I'm for the bill. Now, wait. But a poor relief bill is essentially a charity.
There, you see? He's against it.
Oh, shut up, Wilkins.
You see, charity is part of my religion. Every Jew must give a part of what he earns to charity. But we don't misunderstand it. We know that charity is an ennobling thing, an ennobling thing to the man who gives charity, but sometimes it embitters the life of the man who receives it.
Yes, sir, but I say, if I'm going to be embittered, I want to be embittered on a full belly.
I don't disagree with you, Mr. Wilkins. That's why, if the people of Greenwich send me to Parliament, I'll vote for the poor relief bill.
Good.
Let's leave it at that.
I'm sorry, I can't leave it at that. You see, my religion also teaches me that it is more meritorious to anticipate charity than to give charity. A great man by the name of Maimonides taught us that.
Or maybe he's the man we ought to elect instead of you.
That might be hard to arrange. You see, Maimonides happens to be dead.
Oh, too bad.
You've all been very kind. Perhaps you'll allow me to add that the best charity is to prevent poverty. I hope you agree with that. If you don't, I advise you to vote for my opponent.
In the year 1851, during the reign of Queen Victoria, this is how David Solomons campaigned for Parliament. The people of Greenwich were Christians, and David Solomons was a Jew. And for them, there was much cause for misgiving in that fact. It happened once at a meeting that a man rose in the audience and put to David Solomons the question that was on many lips.
Mr. Solomons, you're a Jew. How can we elect you?
I ask you to elect me as an Englishman, not as a Jew.
But you won't stop being a Jew.
Well, should I? I always thought that in England, a man's religion was his own affair.
Maybe. But if you represent us in Parliament, then your religion also becomes our affair.
Oh, I think that's wrong, sir. Your affair is how I vote, not how I pray to God. But suppose what you say is true. Why should my religion bar me from Parliament?
That's what we want you to tell us.
Well, I think in that case, I should tell you what the Hebrew law is.
Perhaps you should, sir.
Once in the days of the Caesars, a smiling Roman commanded the famous Rabbi Hillel to stand on one leg and expound the entire law.
Well?
Hillel also smiled and answered, "Do not unto others what you would not have others do to thee." That is the entire law. Everything else is commentary. Does that answer your question, sir?
Is that what you believe?
With all my heart.
All right, sir. I'm satisfied.
Greenwich was a Tory stronghold, and David Solomons was a liberal. But in the year 1851, the people of Greenwich elected David Solomons to Parliament. And now, there was a turning of eyes from Ireland and Scotland and Wales and the villages of England toward the Speaker's table in the great House of Commons.
Your name, sir?
David Solomons, Mr. Speaker.
Are you prepared to take the oath?
I am, sir.
Do you, David Solomons, truly and sincerely acknowledge, profess, testify, and declare in your conscience before God and the world that our sovereign Queen Victoria is rightful queen of this realm and all other dominions and countries thereunto belonging?
I do, Mr. Speaker.
Without any equivocation?
Without any equivocation.
Or mental evasion or secret reservation whatsoever?
With none of these, Mr. Speaker.
And do you make this acknowledgement, abjuration, renunciation, and promise heartily, willingly, and truly?
I do.
Upon the true faith of a Christian?
Upon the true faith of a Jew, Mr. Speaker.
You are out of order, sir. The prescribed form of the oath requires you to swear on the true faith of a Christian.
You ask me to renounce my religion, Mr. Speaker?
I ask you to take the oath as it is written.
I do so, Mr. Speaker. I have been legally elected. I have satisfied every requirement of this Parliament. But I will not renounce my religion.
I repeat, Mr. Solomons, you are out of order.
This form of oath is deliberately framed to exclude a section of the population from the rights of Englishmen.
You are contumacious, sir.
No, Mr. Speaker. I am truthful.
Mr. Solomons, it is my direction that you withdraw from the House. I ask the members of this House to come to order.
Thank you.
David Solomon stood before the speaker's table in the great House of Commons. Then slowly he turned. A hush fell upon the assembly as the elected member for Greenwich walked slowly from the rostrum. The sergeant-at-arms held the famous doors open. And then David Solomon stopped. He stopped, then quietly approached a vacant seat among the liberal benches. And he sat down.
Mr. Speaker!
I recognize Sir Robert Inglis.
I rise to protest, sir. The Speaker of the House has ordered this gentleman to withdraw.
Thank you, Sir Robert. Do you withdraw, Mr. Solomons?
No, Mr. Speaker.
You are presumptuous, Mr. Salomon.
I regret it, sir. I appeal for the indulgence of the House. I ask leave to defend my position.
Well, you may not do that, Mr. Solomons. You are not a legal member of this body.
Oh, let him speak.
Yes, let him speak.
Gentlemen, I ask you again for order. You have the indulgence of this House, Mr. Solomons.
Thank you.
You may proceed.
I wish to state, Mr. Speaker, and members of Parliament, that I am to be excluded from Commons not because I am guilty of civil offense or because I am convicted of lack of competence, but because of my devotion to the faith in which I was raised.
Are you done, Mr. Solomon?
Not yet, sir. This House may wish to renounce me, but surely it does not wish to renounce Holy Scripture. Ye shall have one statute, both for the stranger and for him that is born in the land. And remember that I am not a stranger. This is my land, where my father was born and his father before him.
Argue to the point, sir. The statute here is that you are not a legal member of Commons. You have not taken the oath.
I have taken the oath and sworn to it on my faith. I do not impugn your motives, Sir Robert, but what you ask me to do is repugnant to humanity and against every principle of charity and civilization.
How dare you impute to me...
Wait, Sir Robert.
No, I will not.
I appeal to the Speaker for permission to conclude my remarks.
You may proceed.
I do not wish to try your patience.
Then be still.
Say, Sir Robert, let him speak.
Thank you. I say this. If you disqualify me on religious grounds, you are imposing a penalty for the holding of opinion. You are stigmatizing persons for differences of faith. As an Englishman, I tell you this is un-English. I ask this assembly to amend the form of the oath and to act in the spirit of Magna Carta. Thank you, gentlemen. Now I withdraw.
The seat that rightfully belonged to David Solomons remained vacant. And because David Solomons had taken that seat briefly and spoken in the House of Commons without having previously taken the full oath, Sir Robert protested.
I rise on a point of law.
What is your point, Sir Robert?
The member for Greenwich has violated an act of Parliament.
Yes, Sir Robert, but what is your point?
Well, if I am not mistaken, the member for Greenwich is liable to cumulative penalties of £1,500. Am I mistaken, Mr. Speaker?
No, you are not.
Will the government sue for penalties?
The government will not, Sir Robert.
I protest.
Oh, that is your right, Sir Robert. But may I point out to you that Mr. Solomons has a greater right to protest. If there is no further business, the House will adjourn.
There is something in the English spirit that cannot abide meanness or injustice. And it was as if they were embodied in the voice of David Solomons, the voice of the prophets of Israel, saying, "Proclaim liberty throughout the land." And England listened. There were only 30,000 Jews in all of England, but 300,000 Englishmen circulated and signed a petition for the removal of all disabilities. And the House of Parliament began to respond to the will of the people.
My lords, I introduce a bill for the purpose of striking out from the parliamentary oath such portions as are inoperative, idle, and absurd.
And be it further resolved that when any of Her Majesty's subjects professing the Jewish religion shall make the said declaration, the words upon the true faith of a Christian shall be omitted.
I protest, Mr. Speaker.
Call the question.
Gentlemen, the motion to amend the oath has been carried overwhelmingly.
May it please the Commons, it is my conviction that our act is retroactive, and the aggrieved member from Greenwich is, in fact, a legal member of this body.
David Solomons. I say, David. Henry, stop this infernal carriage. Hello, David.
You look very well, Lady Russell.
You look even better, David, in Parliament.
It's kind of you to say so.
That's where you've always belonged.
Thank you.
Fiddlesticks. You belong among the peers of the realm. I hope the Queen makes you a lord someday.
So does my wife. But the rabbi doesn't.
What's he got against the nobility?
Nothing, but another rabbi called Shemaiah once said, love labor, hate lordship, and seek no intimacy with those in authority.
Indeed. Is that in the Talmud, David?
I believe so, ma'am.
Interesting. You must send me a copy sometime. Now let me give you a lift.
Thank you, no, Lady Russell. I'll walk.
Oh, I always forget. It's your Sabbath, isn't it?
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to the synagogue.
It seems to me every time I see you, you're going to the synagogue.
Perhaps so. But tell me, Lady Russell, can you think of a better place for a man called Solomons to go?
So he went to the Duke's Place synagogue, and he sat in the pew where later my father sat and where I sat. I suppose that is the history of any synagogue, the history of the men who stand before the tabernacle of the Lord and speak words of righteousness. Now, the synagogue stands gutted and naked to the wind. The tabernacle of Duke's Place is charred by fire. But there is so much in London that is charred by fire, and so much that will be built again, and built better. David Solomons will not see it, and I shall not see it. But it will be. I have faith in that, and in England, and in the generations of Israel. And that isn't a bad thing at all, is it?
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. George Mack, prominent Jewish civic leader of New York City and a member of the Society for the Advancement of Judaism, who is an active participant in the work of the Jewish Museum. Mr. Mack.
The story of Sir David Solomons is part of the heroic saga of the history of men. Men who believed in the noble concepts expressed in the great political doctrines of the ages. It was not and is not enough to have been granted a Magna Carta, impressive as it may have been at that time, or the Bill of Rights, or even the commandments and ethical teachings of the Bible. We must fight to ensure that these rights are extended to each and every human being, especially those who in practice have been excluded. Throughout history, there have been far more principles of enlightenment than men of courage to ensure such rights for all. Men of courage to fight on all levels, in the courts, in Congress, and in their community. These men did not achieve the benefits under existing rights because they deserved them by reason of birth, religion, or race. It was rather through a strength of will, a belief in the concept, and a stubborn refusal to compromise. Sir David Solomons is not remembered as a Jew or an Englishman, but rather as a believing, practicing, devout man of God who would not compromise his religious beliefs for the sake of convenience or social acceptance. He fully accepted and practiced that which was taught, while others with the same opportunity only mouthed similar sentiments. He proved that rights are not deserved, they are earned. Man dies in many ways, but no way does he die more unknowingly than by his daily compromise for the sake of expediency. It is easy to be adamant when confronted with what are considered the great truths and moral issues of the day. It is that daily compromise for gain, profit, or ease that surely destroys the fiber of man and society. Each of these daily issues involves, in essence, a great truth, for there is no difference between a little or a great injustice. The only difference is in ourselves. At some point, we must make a stand, for we do not deserve rights which we have not earned or for which we are not prepared to sacrifice. If we permit these erosions of our moral values, our days of convenience will only be remembered as the age of the great compromise.
Thank you, Mr. Mack. Our Eternal Light drama today, The Tabernacle in Duke's Place, was written by Morton Wishengrad and was the fifth in a series of recreations of 12 outstanding Eternal Light programs. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical music. Featured in the cast were Rita Lloyd, Alfred Shirley, Vera Allen, Guy Sorrell, John Moore, John Seymour, and Mercer McLeod. Scott Scottsworth played David Solomons. The narrator was Santos Ortega. Be with us next week when The Eternal Light presents Walt Whitman and I, written by Virginia Mazur. This is Bill McCord. Our program was directed by Daniel Sutter. Portions of today's program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.